recording
call
is.
Us like cinema.
Yeah, he called us cinema verite when he heard the mom's basement. This was before I came to be with the group, and then right when Rudy dropped his first N bomb that Dan heard, he walked away.
Oh.
Yeah. Because Rudy's black, but the whole point is he dropped an N bomb like mid-conversation. It's like, yeah, and he quickly walked away.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did not sprint. He walked because, you know, he's a dignified man who's very persistent and consistent with his attitudes.
Yeah, he is a pretty dignified dude.
Yeah. All right, so I'm recording this right now. I'm going to edit that part out.
Okay.
I just wanted to get it running before we started.
Recording?
Yeah, recording.
Right,
are you sure?
This yep. is Mom's sure. Basement, episode 40, where we answer the question, where the fuck is Will?
Yeah, he left us.
Basically, if you guys are listeners, you would understand that there's a third voice that spoke to us a few seconds ago, who started the intro. And as you can tell, he's not Will. So there's a big problem there. Not even close to Will. Thank you. And let's get the introduction.
Is it the voice of God?
You would hope. I would dream, you know, because... I'm a fan of the man. You know, I've heard he's done good things.
On occasion.
But let's get out of the way. Let's get that out of the way here. Because we got to get to the intro. We got to get to the actual show. All right.
Yes.
So.
There's a show?
Yeah, evidently. Well, this is the Mom's RPG Basement. It's the RPG of Mom's Basement. That's what this is called.
Great.
Yeah.
Yes. Every episode, we all play a character where we talk about meaningless bullshit. And then when we're all the end of the game is when we just say, all right, unplug the microphone. Let's get out of here. All right. So without further ado, because we've been pussyfooting around with this, but we have a guest today, a special guest of most special awesometude. His name is Roy, and he's from the Rusak Gamers. Roy.
That would be me.
Howdy, Roy.
Hi guys, how y'all doing?
All right, so what Roy comes to the table with is he has his own podcast with his group of gamers who apparently have sacks and are from the land of Rue. And every week or so, they bring in like an actual play podcast there, and they, you know, they play games, and you can hear them play the games and see if you like it or not, you know, things like that, or just. Gale and their tales of wonders.
Our motto is we make the mistakes so you don't have to.
Oh yeah, there you go. So
that's a good motto.
With that in mind, episode 40 may officially begin. Now,
yay!
Where Will is located, we really have no idea. He said he had to go somewhere to New Hampshire, and I asked him like, "What are you doing over there?" And he said something along the lines of, "Investigating an apartment." And I said,
now, wait, he was going where?
To New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, so he's rich.
And no, not even close.
Like super wealthy. I mean, I thought that's, you know, everyone in New Hampshire was super wealthy. No?
I don't know.
What he said, though, was he was going to investigate an apartment, and then I asked him, like, what are you doing? Checking for ghosts? And, after that, he was all hush-hush.
Gotta check it for ghosts before you move in.
Yeah.
Maybe he is checking for ghosts.
But other than that...
Take his little e-meter or whatever that thing is called?
Yeah, a Geiger counter, because that's what they use. They use the radiation trick as well for the ghost stuff.
I got one of those.
So he's gone for this week, and I pretty much did the standard of Mom's Basement is I just went and groveled. At the knees of a fellow person, and they unwillingly said yes, and so therefore, Roy is with us today. Now, with that said in mind, it's time for the first topic of the day, and Rudy, you're going to be crying many tears in your pillows.
Yeah.
I finally, after weeks and weeks of almost interrogation, of trying to get Dan to acknowledge your pleas, your cries for some attention, he finally brought.
Mm-hmm.
He's finally taken the time to give us said attention. And yeah. You're not going to be pleased with what he had to say.
So it's not good attention, then?
No, it's not.
No, I think he's going to break up with you, dude.
Break up before the Aww. Relationship even happened.
Aww.
So, I mean, I know a lot of you guys have been listening and you've been on bated breath, you know, going like, oh, what's going to happen with this Dan thing? And now we can finally bring it to a close. He's just not that into you, Rudy.
Oh, that is sad. But you know what? I felt it coming for a while.
Yeah, I mean, for like 7 weeks, he said nothing. So.
Yeah. Yep.
I would assume eventually nothing was going to happen. But at least it's official now and we can call it closed.
Look, man, unrequited love is so sad.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. All right. Let's give it a moment of rest. Just a silence.
Moment of silence.
Moment of silence.
Does anybody got a MP3 of Taps to play?
Okay. So
my kingdom for a soundboard.
Yeah. I know, right? If we had a soundboard, this would never get done. Nothing would ever get done on this podcast.
Oh, God, no. It'd be
at least
nothing
I know
but...
if I had one.
It'd be nothing but crickets and taps and all sorts of useless crap.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Let's actually move on. Let's keep it whippy snap there. Roy.
Roger.
God, if we do that, it's going to sound professional.
Well, we try to make it semi. We try to do a little bit of both. So that way, the audience gets the best of both worlds, which is semi-professional, semi-ludicrous.
Semi-ludicrous.
So, Roy, you are here with
yes,
us
sir.
Today, and we are going to ask you a series of questions. I am not going to go get James Lipton in order for us to, finish this questionnaire like we did with Misery Tourism. But,
no James Lipton?
No, because that took a full hour, and I'm not going to go get him to speak for a full hour.
This isn't going to be like the Genisodes question, is it? You know, the puppies, pandas, and all that.
No, it's not stupid questions. They were serious, hard-hitting questions.
Oh, don't call Jen stupid.
I didn't call her stupid, did I? I said her questions were stupid.
She just had Will Wheaton and Monty Cook on her podcast.
Yeah, she's also a girl.
You guys have me.
She's also a girl and semi-attractive, so there you go.
I actually got to meet her last year at Gen Con.
And
she's she's pretty super nice.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's kind of obvious why she gets the big guest. You just, bats the doll eyes, and there we go.
From what I understand, she does something extremely rare. She calls them up and asks them.
Oh, yeah, that also works.
Really? Wow.
Okay, so getting back to the topic, because this is like
yes.
tangent number 15 in like less than 10 minutes. Roy, how the heck
yes.
are you?
I'm doing pretty damn good, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing swell. Rudy?
Yes.
How are you doing, Rudy?
You dropped the ball, Rudy. What the hell?
Dude, I'm doing super good. Super
All
excellent.
All right. So with that in mind, what is Rusat Gamers Foley about? We want to get the skinny on this just for a few moments, and then we'll go on to random bullshit hour.
Okay, well, the Rusat Gamers is an actual play podcast where we do a lot of story games because listening to people argue about D&D rules is really just no fun at all. we're a group of guys. Some of us have been playing since, I think, 1978.
Wow.
So, and some of the guys in the group have actually been playing together since that time. So we're a bunch of old farts. And Jeff got us into playing some story games a few years back. We thought they might be fun to record, and that's how we got started.
Awesome. Is there any specific games that you guys have been recording that people should take a listen to?
Well, we started off with Burning Empires. Then we went to some Burning Wheel Gold. We've even recorded. If you want a fun games to just listen to that aren't going to take you weeks and weeks and weeks, you just want to listen to something fun, you can go and download our Fiasco games. Our Fiasco games are a lot of fun. We had a really great one over the Christmas holidays this year, called Holly Jolly. And I can't recommend that one enough for people to play right around the Christmas holidays. My character was an elf who ended up as a mall elf working in Detroit.
Wow. Working in Detroit. Working where?
At a mall in Detroit. He ended up being a mall Santa assistant in Detroit. Oh, that was fantastic.
Wow. Awesome.
But that's the nature of Fiasco. There actually are Roussacks, by the way.
Are there?
That's how we got our name. Okay. There are Roussacks.
What exactly is a Roussack?
A kangaroo scrotum.
Oh, okay.
It's literal. One of the guys in the group Yeah, actually, it's sitting on the shelf behind me right now. I bring it to Gen Con with me every year. One of the guys in the group went to New Zealand for a business trip. Was gone for like a couple months. And when he came back, he had gifts for us all. And he picked them up when he's out there. Roussacks, kangaroo scrotum. Made into little pouches for our dice.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's great.
Oh, they're fantastic. The problem is that you don't see kangaroos bragging about their scrotums a lot because these things are really small. I had to buy special small dice just to put into the special small Roussack.
Oh, well, that just goes to show you that there is no competition.
Absolutely not.
Well, no, I'm gonna get super nerdy on this one here, but basically the size of your sack is dependent on how fierce the competition is. So if you have big balls, it means you probably were part from a generation of people who consistently raped a bunch of people all the time. So there's something to be happy about.
What text were you listening to?
I mean, there's something to be happy about, evidently.
No, that came from Wikipedia, didn't it?
Probably. It's probably on there. I didn't read that.
Well, you ought to write it in. I mean, that's the great thing about Wikipedia. Anybody can write in whatever they want at any given time.
But basically, what it means is it's the amount of competition, because they found this with rats, is that the fiercer the competition, the bigger their balls were, because you know, they have fighters in those systems. That's the detail behind it, and so that's why like gorillas have almost like the smallest of smalls, because they don't really fight that often for their mates. Hmm. So there you go. That's why the kangaroo thing is so small, is because I guess they're not fighting for it that often.
And that is biology time, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. So
drop some knowledge.
Yeah, drop some knowledge. Keep it real, son. Okay. So with that in mind, I think that's all the serious questions we really need to give you, because, you know, if they want to learn more, they're just going to listen.
Ought to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, they're going to love it. So
The podcast is really actual play. We don't do a whole lot of, you know, yakking about other stuff. I mean, well, technically we do. I just edit all that crap out. So it's just us playing the games, listening. So when you listen to it, it's just, you know, us trying to be our characters and through the rules and trying to understand things.
You do random conversations every now and then, but it's like it's not really on purpose. There's like no real point to it, because I remember like the last episode you guys did, like the Dresden Files one, when you did character creation, you left a 10-minute chunk there about you guys just jogging for miles. Doing marathons.
Wait, oh my god, I did leave that in, didn't I? Yeah, I did the mini marathon here in Louisville, Kentucky.
So yeah, there you might be hopeful and get some random conversations.
I forgot about that.
If Roy drops the ball on editing stuff.
I won that, by the way. The competition between me and my wife. My wife is a race walker, and I run half-assedly. But I actually beat her. And she's fast for a race walker.
I'm sorry, Roy, but when you say race walker, the first image that comes to my head is the planeswalkers for Magic the Gathering. So instead of her going from plane of existence to plane of existence, it's her going to different races, like, you know, blacks, Asians.
Yeah. See, that came up in my head, too.
You guys are weird, man. Oh, God. What the hell am I doing here?
You agreed to the contract, and we have your kids.
Look, yeah, but making me sign in blood was going overboard a bit.
It is a blood oath. It's meant to, you know.
God help us all.
So that way no one backs down.
God, I really left that in. I really meant to cut that out. Oh well.
Well, we all got to enjoy a little piece of you, so that was awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah. Now time to get our serious face on.
Okay.
This is when we enter the random hour of random bullshit.
Okay.
Because
what
all of us
random bullshit shall we bullshit about?
All right, so let's take a gathering from each other for some ideas here, and then we'll just go ahead and pick one and just go with it. Rudy, since you're not the guest, I want you to throw some suggestions out there.
Okay, how about nuns?
I approve.
I like nuns.
Yeah.
I had 12 years of Catholic schooling. I like nuns.
Oh, nice. All right. Let's see. Where are some other good... Well, you can go, Alex. You can...
All right. Well, I read this post there on the Twitter, and this got my blood boiling a little bit. Let's see here. I think it was... based on our beloved Dan, because I bookmarked his Twitter feed because I asked people to spam his account of saying, "Hey, bro, you know, go talk to Rudy." And so I checked it frequently to see anyone doing that stuff. All right, here we go. I refuse to believe, this is by Ben Lehman. It says, "I refuse to believe that what we're doing is just a subpar form of improv theater when it comes to RPGs." Now, what I want to know is, what do you guys feel about that? Like, do you agree with him? Do you think it's nonsense? I have my opinion on it, so I'm going to wait for a second, so that way, you know, any of you who are in disagreement of me don't go on a tyrant of just bashing what I have to say. I want you guys to go first. Because I will not judge you.
Unlike, I would just like to know if what exactly is he trying to say? Is he trying to say that what we're doing is high grade improv theater?
I guess that's
yeah. See, that's a good point.
Or did someone say he's playing low grade improv theater and he's refuting that?
Well, I checked the replies to it, and there was no conversation piece before that lets you know that there's something that, you know, you got ticked off or something like that. But the idea behind it was, a lot of people, at least from my neck of the woods, consider when it comes to like story games by themselves that really it is just improv theater. And because a lot of the rules are so loose that there's no real game. The game itself is improv. Go along with what's been thrown at you. Like, you know, talk to this guy and don't laugh. That's the improv. And that's the game. So therefore, you know, there's a lot of games out there that are just really considered improv theater. There's no real, you know, mechanical game to it. There's just bullshit game. And so I think that's what he was getting at, is he refuses to believe that what he's doing is just a version of improv theater.
Well, look, if you're sitting by yourself in your basement, your dorm room, your apartment, whatever, and you've got a stack of 3x5 cards in front of you and you're open to the first page of Fiasco, you are engaged in improv theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got more friends involved, then you're having a game and you're having fun. If you begin to take it seriously, then you are back into the improv theater. Whether it's good or not, it's subject to opinion.
Yeah, because ultimately, the thing that what I'm reading from here is he's thinking that that's some form of like a badge of honor that he has to have pride behind, thinking that he's doing high grade, you know, art. And, you know, high-grade storytelling, rich and, you know, beautiful work. He's giving a lot of, I want to say credence. He's giving a lot of importance on the aspect of that. When really, there's no judging behind it. I think it's like a defense of him saying that versus, like, dude, just let it be. And that brings me to another topic. Of these fucking indie games.
Uh-oh.
And these people, this pissed me off so much. I'm almost about to turn Hulk angry. Oh, by the way, I'll give my answer in a few seconds about the improv theater thing. But this is beyond ridiculous. I had people, you know, basically go wah right in front of me. But I want to call these things indie games. And the problem I'm having with is there's people who want to basically be proud of the title indie being attached to a game, and that it's a way for them to, like, you know, to label it, so that way there's no confusion on what style of game it is. When, like, the thing that pisses me off the most about indie games is the title alone tells me nothing. But it's used all over the world as a method of making it better than what it really is. And by people calling it indie games, like, oh, this is magical, this is all kinds of wonderful. Meanwhile, I read indie game and I read it for its actual definition, and I don't care. You know, all that magic that they built up is just gone because I don't use the word for their slang terms. I use it for what it really is.
Yeah, but gamers aren't the only ones responsible for this problem. I mean, you got the same thing with music.
Yeah.
Indie labels.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, independent magazines. I mean, you've got all kinds of stuff out there. The problem is that people don't have a better label for it. And so they start using indie as something that's cool because... Yeah, something indie was cool at one time, so they just keep using it.
I think one problem is the term indie has a lot of baggage from, like you said, music and cinema and that kind of stuff. And I think people associate some of the, you know, the baggage with the games when you see that label. You know, that, like, you know, just an example, like, that all indie is kind of art house and pretentious and that kind of stuff. I know it when anybody calls anything indie, that's like the first thing I think of.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. That's the first thing that pops into my head. The other thing is just because it's indie doesn't mean it's good. Just because it's indie doesn't mean it's bad either.
Yeah.
It's whatever you make of it. I mean, hell, you can get together with a group of friends and have fun just, you know, God, playing liar's dice.
So yeah, that was my biggest pet peeve there about just the title alone. It's I feel that it should be removed. In order, if you want to make independent games legitimate, you should probably consider trying to get rid of that title. Because this is what I was going to say as my response to, you know, the people, the whiny bitches who are complaining, like, oh, you're making fun of our thing. You're fracturing the community as it is, you know, by naysaying them and calling people, like, you know, elitist pricks and douchebags and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I read your post.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I read it too.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, what I really wanted to say, I wanted to Godwin this and say, okay, so you want to pretend that indie game is like, you know, this super special thing that, you know, means more than what it's supposed to mean. And I'm trying to tell you, hey, you know, you should stop calling it that because you're bringing your own hatred upon you. Why don't you just call indie games Nazi games? And then you're going to get a completely different audience.
Yeah, that would Godwin it.
you'll get a completely different audience just on that title alone. But yeah, because it's so special and hip to you to use that word, evidently it has to be used. That's what I'm getting at. Just replace the indie part and then replace it with something offensive, and then, oh shit, you're doing these, you're proving the point of what I'm trying to make here.
Well, I mean, the term indie itself isn't actually offensive. It's just annoying to me, anything. I mean, so that's why I've always used the term story games for the stuff that we record, because it's a lot more descriptive. It's a lot more about what we're actually doing. We are trying to tell a story, but we're playing a game at the same time. You know, we're trying to have fun. So, story games worked for me.
Yeah, that's definitely it's a much clearer version of what most indie games are, you know, because a lot of indie games are story games.
It also avoids the fact that, you know, you get so many people start screaming at me when I say D&D is a role playing game.
All right, so going back to, like I said, I was going to answer this. I believe that what most people are doing are improv theater when it comes to story games and role playing games. But the only difference is I'm willing to admit we're doing that.
The other thing is you know, we're using dice. And dice is cool.
It's totally different than using a hat and getting an answer from it. It's totally different.
And little sheets of paper. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wait a minute. We use 3x5 cards when we're playing Fiasco. And dice. Oh, God, it is improv theater.
But like the whole point is like there's nothing wrong with it, like you're no. it's these people who are too serious about these games. It's their fault for trying to defend something that doesn't need defending.
Yeah, I go back to the old school definition of game, and it's the same definition I think I've used since I think I must have been 3 when I learned Candyland.
Yeah.
You know, it's a game. You know, it's supposed to be fun in some kind of shape or form. It's supposed to be fun. You're supposed to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's, no, you know, that's why I don't like to call it improv theater, because improv theater, it can be fun, but it doesn't have to be. It can be serious. It can be dramatic. It can be heartbreaking. It can also be fucking hilarious.
All right, so
yeah,
are we done with that topic now? Can we go on to something else?
Yeah, we're pretty much done. Roy, do you want to throw something out there? What you want to throw?
I would love to make fun of you for not liking Avengers, but I don't think you saw Avengers yet, have you?
Oh no. I didn't.
I actually loved that movie. I thought it was...
Rudy, wasn't it great, Rudy?
It was.
Yeah, why don't you guys...
And the Hulk was just pitch perfect.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah, why don't you guys just bask in the movie while I just sit here in the corner?
We will. Just hold on. Just hold on a second.
Okay.
Rudy, are you an old-school Marvel fan or not?
No. I'm a fan of the movies, and that's about it. Old-school X-Men.
Do what?
Old-school X-Men, the cartoon show. That's about as deep as I go.
I'm so damn old if you're calling the cartoon old school X-Men. Oh, God. Okay, so without any spoilers, because, you know, we're only a week into the release, did you know who the guy was in the little snippet at the very, very end?
Yes, I did.
You actually, when he turned around and looked and smiled at the camera, you actually knew who that was?
When they showed his face, I knew who it was, yeah.
Okay. Okay, because I was having to explain that to people.
You know what you should do? You should just throw out the a random hero's name from Marvel, and then just go like, "Oh, dude, I was totally shocked."
Galactus. Oh, wait, no, he was the giant cloud in the Fantastic Four movie, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Even Will brought that up. He's like, I want to see a cool Galactus. It's like, yeah, I didn't see Fantastic Four because I thought it was garbage. That's what he said.
I saw it. I don't know if I'd call it garbage, but...
There's too much. Garbage. Yeah, there's too much focus on a relationship movie versus a real Fantastic Four movie.
You could have done that because you go back to the 60s and read some of those comics. A lot of it was relationship, but, you know, there's a great series of comics, Fantastic Four versus the X-Men back in the 80s. If you ever get a chance to read it, it's really good. The core of it is relationship issues between Mr. Fantastic and, you know, the Invisible Woman and between different X-Men. It's some fantastic stuff. They get to beat the living crap out of people, too, though. A lot like the Avengers movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it did have some awesome beatdowns in it. But I was going to say, wasn't there one point where Mr. Fantastic actually, like, beat his wife or something, beat the Invisible Woman up? I've seen, like, a strip of it on the Googles.
I don't know if he did. Ant-Man did. Ant-Man actually smacked his wife, the Wasp.
Yeah, see, I heard about that.
Oh, if you want to see some fun, go to Google. Go to Google and do this search. Batman Papa Spank.
Batman Papa Spank.
Yeah. There's actually an issue from late 50s, early 60s of Batman where he bends this woman over his knee and says, "Shut up, Papa Spank."
What was this, like, this was the 40s or 19?
No, I think it's 50s and 60s, sometime in there.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Really, wow.
Yeah, he was taking a page from Hulk and, like, shortening his sentences. Papa Smack.
Yeah, it was, there's some really weird crap coming out of the 60s. But yeah, Batman, some of that Batman stuff was just freaking hilarious. Okay, getting back, Avengers. Rudy, you like the Avengers? It was good stuff, wasn't it? What was your favorite part?
That was. I think my favorite part was when, I'm trying to think. I had a couple of favorite parts. I think probably my all-time favorite was when the Hulk punched Thor.
Oh, that was great. That was great.
Because the Hulk really was just awesome. I didn't know how the Hulk was going to be in that because they didn't have Ed Norton, and that was my favorite Hulk, but the guy that they had was definitely pretty awesome. So,
oh yeah, I mean, they really got him. You're right, they got him pitch perfect. And I saw the Ang Lee Hulk movie, so I can tell you how bad that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, sad
but
Hulk.
This was really good.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah. Okay. So, Alex, your homework is to go see the Avengers movie.
See it.
I will attempt to watch it, and I will at least give 30 minutes.
Nice.
30 minutes. Yeah, 30 minutes is fine.
I think within
the first 30 minutes, you get the really good Black Widow scene when she's tied up to the chair by the Russians. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I explained about it last week, but there's very few superhero movies I would care for, and a lot of the new ones I really didn't care for. So it's going to be interesting to see if you say this is as good as you say it is.
Yeah, it was really good. It may be the best, the absolute best superhero movie I've ever seen.
All right. Well, then I'll.
Have you seen Chronicle?
I have not seen Chronicle yet. I really do want to see it. When it came out, I just had a lot of stuff going on. I didn't get to make it to the theater. But it's as soon as it comes out on DVD, I do want to see it. It's not out yet, is it?
No, I don't think it's on DVD yet.
Okay. Well, Blu-ray.
Yeah, or whatever.
Download, whatever.
But yeah, Ultraviolet. It was definitely pretty awesome. Ultraviolet.
No, not the movie.
Is that like what the isn't that like the Walmart thing that they do now?
I don't know who owns it, but it what? Seems to work. It comes through in Flixster, so I like it because I can watch it on my tablet.
Okay. Okay, I want to ask you guys this question because this is part of the different part of the community for RPG games there.
Okay.
But what do you guys feel about like about war game RPGs? You know, things like that.
Well, like Warhammer?
Yeah. You know, like Warhammer 40K, you know, the fantasy settings, you know, when we get to the war games aspect of it. What do you guys feel about that?
There's a different aspect to it. It's because you're not really taking on a character. You're just trying to come up with a good war band. It's a lot like, you know, the idea of Magic the Gathering, putting together a decent deck. But some of this stuff is amazingly cool. I mean, those guys get really crazy with the paints.
Yeah, because I have some, you know, experience in the war games, because wargaming was the thing I first came to when it came to this section, and then I slowly started that. You know, that's how I got into D&D was, the idea that I could use miniatures and still, you know, screw around, you know, chewing the fat, in a story element.
Yeah,
and then, you know, went on from there, but. Like for me, I started doing role playing in middle of war games just because you pretty much you had to do a discussion like a cinematic breakdown of like being like a director when you did a lot of the war games, and that helped quite a bit. It all depends on how far you're gonna go into it. Like this thing here, just to make the easiest of references, Star Wars miniatures. You know, the battle games that, you know, WizKids came out with.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Basically, what we did, like me and my friend, it's the same friend who I pulled that trick with the, you know, the Wheel of Time books. You know, when it came to the prank, the trolling episode. It's that same
dude.
Yeah,
that was a classic, right?
But anyways, we played the Star Wars game together. We set up our dudes, and the goal was that we each had to pick he picked Obi-Wan, I picked Count Dooku, and what it was is we were in the tunnels, getting ready with the freight ships and all that kind of stuff, the trains going back and forth. And like the way we set up the scenario was he was on one side and, you know, Dooku was his army was on the other side, you know, standard battle formations. And the way we role played this was that Dooku was trying to get Anakin and Obi-Wan went to go save him. And then Obi-Wan got left behind trying to, you know, stall for time. And, you know, like we even like started out with like cheesy like intros. And he said we did the pretend pan to Eric's sorry, that's his name, Eric. We panned to his characters, and he says, kind of like in the boomy microphone voice, like, you know, we got to get to Anakin, you know, that kind of thing. We got to protect him. And then I played as Dooku, and I said, search the area. None of them shall escape. You know, and then we start, you know, doing like the battle music and all that kind of stuff. But just that aspect, when we start, we're basically, instead of doing role playing of like personal characters, we role played entire scenes out of like directing, and we use the roles to determine hit and misses and all that kind of stuff like you do with the normal game. But being able to expand upon that was almost as rewarding as an actual role play. And I think more people should be considered doing that, even though it's definitely it's kind of a weird subject to do for role playing games itself.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of some people doing that. They have a term for it in war gaming, but I guess some war games have like campaigns and stuff like that that you kind of run, and like you said, you kind of direct the action a little bit. But yeah, I mean, that seems like it'd be something I'd naturally do anyway, because I do that shit with like Risk. I mean, I will roleplay during a risk
game. You don't roleplay during Monopoly, do you?
Not really.
Because I've never been able to get into the shoe. I never quite gotten the shoe's personality.
Yeah.
Oh, what you probably could do is it could be like, you know, this old tuxedo, you know, that play. Where it could be, you know, a walk in different people's shoes as they buy different, like, you know, locations and stuff. It could be kind of like that.
Oh, God.
Well, you know, they have that with all those, like, some of those hipster movies where they go, like, you know, I think Will talked about this movie before where they show the history of a $20 bill passing along people.
Oh, yeah.
Just yeah, so think about that with a pair of shoes. I think you can do it like that.
Yeah. No, that'd be pretty cool.
As you go from consignment shop to consignment shop.
Yeah, that's right. For $120 or these pair of shoes, you too can own this property.
What were you going to say, Rudy?
Oh, I was just saying, I totally think that that there's room in war games for that type of stuff. Because, you know, as I said, in most groups, it naturally happens anyway. So, I don't know. I'd just like to see some war games with actual rules for that. That'd be pretty sweet.
Now, like, you can actually, if you think about it, though, that's what D&D is. And, yeah, a lot of people don't call D&D a role-playing game. Especially, like, you know, those indie people.
Those people, huh?
Yeah, them's people.
Yeah.
So, like, why would there be a lot of people who would have a break in that immersion? Like, they could pretend of doing their, you know, their improv theater, you know, to go back to that, but they can't pretend to direct a scene with miniatures.
Yeah.
And not call that a role-playing game.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of the wargaming guys, though, they also end up just treating it like a game of chess.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell you what, one of the coolest war games that I've ever seen was at Gen Con a few years back. I think these guys do it every year, but they do Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
With massive, massive ships in a ballroom. And I don't know how long the games go on because they're always in there playing. The models are amazingly intricate. And they cross genres in some of the games. So you'll have Galactica 1978, 79 when it came out. And you'll have the more modern version also.
Oh, okay.
It must cost a lot of money to do it.
Well, Regan, like since you know I have experience in this, like let's just give you an example of like the price of a little figure, like a dude to represent, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Let's say it's about 3 inches tall because that's a 25mm scale. That's how how nerdy we're gonna go here. About $5, unpainted.
Really?
Ooh, and unpainted. Warband is like what? How many? 30, 40?
Yeah, it gets up there.
Phew.
So, but that's like a high detail figures, and like the people who are going to want to do that kind of stuff where they paint their figures, they're probably going to want to get high painted, you know, the high quality ones. So they're shelling out $4 to $5 a figure. They're getting ready to pay a few $100 just for a small army, not even close to like an awesomely cool army, like in terms of like how big they are in size. Yeah, it gets way too expensive, and that's why whenever I played war games, I always used pre-painted figures, and I, you know, like from WizKids and such, and just went with those, because the quality is good enough to the point where I never really cared about it, to where it was like, it wasn't atrocious, you know, it was in the good enough category, and that's pretty much what we did for Star Wars, because when we bought the booster packs for those figures, that's all we really did is in the quality of those. Like if you took look at some of those pictures, pretty darn decent. Like the first print runs of them making those models, the first castings, I should say, that's the term. They were kind of there was a lot of mishaps in terms of like where the ink went. So like clone trooper face masks weren't fully on board. They weren't fully together there. But then later on, they got really good on the details, and pretty much every like when WizKids first came out, you should never buy any of those models because they're just utter garbage.
What, in the first
like,
set?
Like the first, I want to say like the first six sets of when they came out was just utter trash. Like the face looked like it was melting, like, you know, Ark of the Covenant style. And you
they got it down now. I've bought some of the Paizo ones and they're amazing.
Yeah, they finally got it together now. It took them like let's just to give you like an example here, like right near the end of Horrorclix. That's when WizKid finally got the modeling down.
Okay.
So around that year is when they started getting everything ready. Of course, that's when they disbanded for like a few years and then got back together as, you know, the what is it, NCEA or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
No, it's NECA. That's what it was.
NECA?
Okay. Yeah. NCEA is a completely different group, and yeah.
Don't look them up on the internet? What?
Probably shouldn't. I don't think so. Because I saw it at first glance, I was like, oh, geez, what is this group? And then I saw that I made correct. Anyways, let's just move on. Find out for yourselves. Go ahead and research it if you want.
I think it was Sean K. Reynolds, who works for Paizo now. I think I heard him give a interview one time where he talked about, because he was doing war gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the guys, you know, he would go and want to do these war games where the people were extremely serious about painting their character. They wouldn't let you participate unless your war band was painted.
Yeah.
And he went in one time where he'd come in and he just spray painted all of his characters one color. He just took him out. He just took a big can of crayon spray paint, just, you know, just blasted them all red or something like that.
You'd be surprised how much of a standard practice that is with war gamers. It's just spray, just coat, and you're done. But that's a whole other subject with when it comes to war gamers, is because, you know, that's the serious aspect of people who take, you know, the shit too seriously.
Serious business.
We don't like those people. You should never take your shit too seriously.
Yeah, because I mean, like, you know,
there should always be an element of humor.
I mean, like, here's how I ask this. You know, here's how I think about this. What do you gain by taking this seriously? And if you can't give some good answers for it, you should stop taking it so seriously.
That is so profound.
That is.
A wise man was asked, if a blind man is about to die, does he see a bright light? Or does it get even darker?
Was that on a fortune cookie?
No, I've made that up like several years ago. And like,
okay, because it sounded like a fortune cookie.
But the best part is I actually made that up. That's awesome. I think it's so rude and insensitive that a lot of people wouldn't use that as a quote for wise one teachings.
Confucius say.
No matter where you go, there you are.
Yes. I love. That's why I love war gaming, though. It's just, there's so many ways, just like with role playing, there's so many ways where you can take it seriously or you can take it light, and just the idea of, you know, screwing around with each other, you know, with the, you know, the playing with miniatures and all that kind of stuff, and playing out an entire scene is just, it's a nice idea that you can just, you don't have to have five different, like, you know, traits on your character sheet, and you have to come up with all these ideas. It's out there already for you. The picture is being drawn as we speak for in war games, and so it just makes it to where everything just matches up perfectly. There's like no really confusion when it comes to what's being there on the table. Like when we do normal role playing, like, you know, the improv theater, as we will. I'll keep mentioning it because I just love the idea of someone even labeling it that, like that. When we do that, all of us have a different image in our mind of what's really going on. Like, you know, like the hairstyle might be different, or the guy may look cooler in your thoughts than he is on the other guy. But right there, everyone shares the same vision because, you know, you actually have physical objects to represent it. And I think that's kind of awesome.
Oh, yeah. The amount of time I've spent trying to find a mini perfect for my character. Oh, God. And it never works. It's because, you know, I find a mini to be perfect for other people's characters.
Yeah.
Oh, this would be perfect for Jeff. Oh, Doug would love this. Oh, this would be great. Where the hell is mine? All I'm doing is trying to find a freaking Warforged, people. Come on.
Oh, so you looked at some of the D&D miniatures? Because they had some Warforged on there. They have like six different.
Yeah, I am surrounded in my... I'm in my basement game room right now. And I am surrounded by probably about 1,000 miniatures.
Wow.
And the lion's share of them are D&D minis, but I've also used repurposed WizKid stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of Horrorclix, actually.
Yeah.
Horrorclix had some real good ones. Like, they had a bunch of different gorilla types that I used in a campaign not too long ago. Just cut them off the bases and put them on, you know, better sized bases for our battle mat, but... Yeah, I've got a crap little toys in my basement.
Yeah, I would vote, I would recommend to anybody, if like you need miniatures, don't even bother painting your own. Just go. There's already tons of like produced cast, you know, little minis there. And that, because of the way this marketplace works with pre-painted minis, almost nobody wants them. So you're going to get them dirt cheap.
Like, oh, yeah. There's tons of places out there.
I funded like an entire like 40K army just like with less than $100. And I had like 300 troops. Like, I almost got like a quarter a piece pretty much, and they were all clone troopers and everything like that. So they matched like some of the army stuff. So it was awesome. Like, I just by doing that, I had like several squads of Mandalorians and all that kind of stuff. So they looked badass too. And like dirt cheap. Like, way, like I probably would have spent like $3,000. Like, and about 5 weeks of my life painting those figures when I just spent, you know, less than 100 and 5 days of waiting for it to show up. And, oh, awesome.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that kind of stopped me from getting into war games is all the, like, the painting intensity and stuff like that. The work you have to do to put in, you know, to get started, I guess.
A lot of that has gone away, where you don't have to worry about that anymore, just because a lot of people paved the way for lazy people like us.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, like, you
lazy,
can totally...
Lazy's good.
Yeah, lazy's lazy. Good. Yeah, that's one way of saying you're wasting your time, is I'm lazy. But yeah, I like, pretty much an advertisement for Wargamers. You know, get out there, try them. There's some very cheap ways of doing it. That's my spiel for today. Besides all the rage I spewed about indie games and shit like that.
That was a lot of rage.
Just,
what's going to happen when you find an indie war game?
I already made one, so I'm fine with it.
Have you done a Kickstarter for it yet? You know.
Oh, hey. No. See, I'm. You know, it's one of the standards of indie gamers. It's always a work in progress, and it's never.
Never.
You know, kind of like that one game that's like, I think it's called like Final Hour of a Storied Age.
Oh boy.
Where the guy's just gonna spend like next, like what he spent like what 2 years on it, just like pretending to get it done, and it's still not done. Yeah, it's been about 2 years. It's not going to get done. Because what else can you complain about when you don't have your pet project anymore once completed?
That's true.
You got a point there.
You know, actually, that actually is another subject I can bring her on. It's procrastination and how prevalent it is with people of our sorts.
Geeks?
I think there's definitely a lot of procrastination in the indie role-playing game community as far as getting stuff together and getting shit out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of it, you know, turns on the fact that a lot of people know they're not going to make a lot of money. They know that they have to have a real job, so it gets pushed to the back because it's the only way they can really survive. But then again, there's people like, what's his name? Daniel Solis. I mean, dude, that guy comes out like a game every 5 minutes.
Yeah, that guy is prolific as fuck.
Oh my God, he's incredible. I mean...
I think that he's a good example of like what the standard practice of people who sell their games usually is: your audience is only so big, and the only way you can really get money is by churning out as much as possible and hoping the same customers keep buying your stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, what I wanted to get at specifically when it came to procrastination is, you know, we have it. Like, what would be, what's one of your greatest fears behind getting stuff done? Like, what's the exact reasoning for you of why you don't want to get something done? Because I have my reasons. And again, I'll reserve judgment. I'll reserve the ability to say something, and I'll be the last one to say it because, you know, it'll be very personal. Exactly.
Something good on TV.
Something good on TV. It's like almost like a drama, soap drama. And so.
No, that's my excuse for not getting something done right away. Yeah. There's something good on TV.
All right, so Rudy, what are you?
I have a better excuse. The internet.
Oh, the internet. Okay.
Oh, that's a good excuse. Yeah. Because right, there's TV on the internet too.
Exactly. And usually I'm working in Google Docs or something anyway, so, like, I'm already on the internet, and I'm already at Google, I mean, so it's like, it's so easy to just slip away and go to Wikipedia for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. All right, so, like, for me, I actually am one of those people where, like, the greatest fear is what's going to happen when I'm done with this. Are people going to accept it like the way I hope they do? You know, basically all the nervousness you would get before you go on a date. You know, to go.
So you're afraid of what the goodnight kiss is going to be? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay, I can understand that. That's terms I can understand. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's my personal thing for it is like, because I've actually done things, you know, I've completed projects before, you know, and all that kind of jazz. But when it comes to this thing, there are very few projects I have committed besides, you know, pretending to have a podcast. Outside of that, there isn't much I haven't really accomplished when it came to role-playing games themselves. I really don't have anything published. I have things written down, of course, like everyone else does. But not a lot of things that are like, you know, stamp of approval, this is a published game on my belt. And I think that's one of the reasons why is what's going to happen after I publish this game? Is it just going to sit on the shelf? Is no one going to appreciate it? You know, that kind of thing. It's my baby, yo.
The worst thing possible would be someone wants to play it constantly.
Yeah.
Because then you got to churn out more material.
All right, but that's all I had to say about it, because that happens way too often with this community. The people who want to claim they're part of this community is that there's a lot of talk and not a lot of action. You know,
an awful lot of talk.
Yeah.
Well, but a lot of those communities, it's really easy to just walk into a forum and start talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no expectation of completion. It's, you know, a lot of people don't really want to do a game. They want to get some ideas out and down, but they don't really have any intention of coming up with some kind of game that's going to be sold. And like I said, it's just easy to walk in and start talking.
Oh, speaking of which, I have like two projects I need to finish up on. Well, I actually did attempt one project for part of my, you know, something to be proud of, and that's when I wanted to do my my test run of Sunrise in Awesome Land, which is a which was a mini attempt to start my own podcast thing, and the idea was to jump off and talk about campaign ideas and stuff like that. Basically, like, you know, do like full-fledged campaign scenarios if you wanted to try it.
And oh, that sounds like the old Dragon's Landing podcast.
And I did two attempts at it. I got no one to even like look at it, and I said, "Okay, F it, I'm done." And then you guys said, "Hey, we need your help over at Mom's Basement," and I came on to here.
And thank God,
thank God,
because we would be lost without you.
Oh, thanks. That's so kind of you.
Totally.
Oh. You guys want me to leave so y'all can have some moment alone?
Okay.
Oh, no, that's all right.
Moving on to that thing. The other project I have to do, because I have some success in actually doing the, you know, completing the shit I want to complete. The other one is I want to finally finish writing up that Crystal Capers game. Now, Roy, did you hear about what I did there?
Crystal Capers? No, I have not.
Yes, it's hilarious on multiple occasions, for multiple reasons.
Multiple levels?
Multiple levels. There we go. I like to exchange words, and they don't really have the exact same meaning.
that word, I do not think it means what you think it means.
Anyways, it was on 36. We talked about random bullshit and Crystal Capers. And basically, I love the dice mechanic so damn much that I definitely need to finish the dice mechanic up. And I just need to explain. I need to get further detail on the world of magic that I have set up. And just to get a quick synopsis here, the way the dice mechanic is set up is each, like, for the what you do is you get points of dice, and you know, each point is worth 1d6. You grab all your 1d6, and you roll it. You get your numbers there, right? What you do is you don't add it up. You don't do like the standard of, you know, add 6, you know, add 5, all that kind of stuff to get like a target number. What you do is you look at all the dice and you find the mode. It sounds complicated, but it's actually not, considering like there's less than 10 dice. There's less than 10 dice. Okay. You find the most common number, and then you take all those dice and below it and remove it from the game. You know, those don't count. Everything above it are your successes and your failures. And what you do is you grab your good dice and you grab your bad dice, because, you know, those are your challenges, and you roll them together, and that's how you get, and that's how it works. And we try.
So you got a set of black dice and a set of white dice, and all of them, for example, if 3 was your mode, all 3, 2s, and 1s are removed.
Exactly. And then all this thing, all the good and bad dice that are above it, they cancel each other out and all that kind of stuff. And whatever on top, that's what happens. So if it's good dice, you know, positive thing happens. If it's 0, you don't get what you want, and it's not terrible. And if it's a black die, something terrible happens. And I've never seen any mechanic do this. So it was one of those things where it was an aha moment. And when we actually did it in play, basically what it did is it forced the character to be in charge versus the player being in charge of the character.
So you're basically obfuscating dice mechanics in order to force the player to role play.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, right. Man, I can't believe I pulled that out.
Cause like there were several examples in that dice mechanic setup where, the players wanted to do something that was kind of, you know, just to be dicks, and the dice went not in their favor, and it made it to where they forced themselves to kind of act in character more often. Like, just a quick example here. When Will wanted to shoot a little girl, yeah. The girl was completely defenseless, so the challenge was a 1 on the black dice there, and his skills basically were he had 8 dice in order to, you know, good dice in order to do it, and he failed it. And so what ended up happening was, instead of getting what he wanted, he himself was confused and puzzled, like, what the fuck is this? How is this possible for me to fail this? And then he acted that out for that entire scene. Was like, why can't I shoot this girl? I've shoot tons of people like this. And it was just one of those dramatic scenes of like, oh, this is awesome. You know, any other dice system would not have allowed this to happen. So that's why I want to have that completed.
No, it was like an
go ahead, Rick.
It was like an existential crisis for the character.
Yeah.
It's like, why can't I shoot her? No, that was really cool. I like that dice system a lot.
And then the other project I want to finish, Oh yeah, it was that war game thing I wanted to do. And what it is, it's kind of like a mixture of Battleship and like tactical war games, where you have two boards and it's a 5x5 board. And basically what happens is you play Battleship, and your figures are in charge of making the shots. So like when you have your Battleship board, you know, because like it's I think it's like a 15x15 grid. Mm. And you you know, you place your units and then you say where you shoot your missile. What happens is, since the grid is smaller, what happens is you move your troops around along the grid and you declare where you're going to shoot. And you also roll to see whether or not you stay hidden as you move from square to square. And it's a guessing game. And if you guys get caught, you're splayed out in the middle of the open of where, so that way both players can see, you know, what's going on, or multiple players if there's multiple players. And it's just like, oh shit, I've been caught, and now everyone sees where I'm at. So it's a whole level of dread, you know, because it's the whole point of like what I like Battleship about, is there was that chance for dread to happen, of like, you know, being concerned with your ships and all that kind of stuff. But because the board was so huge and you really didn't have much control outside of just the guessing game, it made it not so much fun. But when you have all that those other elements into it, it makes it a lot more interesting. Those are my two little pet projects,
really, yeah,
that I want to complete.
Cool. Well,
that makes me feel lazy.
Yeah.
It also makes me feel lazy, but I'm used to that.
Yeah. So you don't have any. There's nothing going on for you guys. You know, we'll round out with this. You know, like what do you guys have going on for, you know, any plans? Like, what do you want to get done?
Like,
relatively soon.
I have
right now.
Six... Go ahead, Rudy.
Oh no, you can go ahead.
I was just gonna say, look, I've got six miniatures that one of the other guys asked me to paint for him 3 years ago, and I've not finished it yet. And we finished the campaign that he wanted them for already.
So what you're saying is you're hoping to get that done?
Yeah, before Gen Con.
All right.
So no, really, I was going to say is...
Look, the stuff that I do, I have no interest in contributing to the gaming community in that way, shape, or form, because I just don't really have the time to put into it, and there's nothing that's so pressing on me right now that says to me, I have to get this game out. I mean, I'm doing good to learn the systems that I'm trying to run right now. We just started the Dresden Files stuff and then the podcast. I have no idea how to run Fate, and the next podcast will demonstrate that. So it's
nice.
The stuff that I really want to do is just learn how to play the games that I've already got well. I mean, I'm still learning things about Burning Wheel, so, and having a great time with that. I feel no need to tweak or to build on the community that way, shape, or form. I'll just ride on the backs of everyone who's a lot more creative than me.
Well, what I was asking you for, it wasn't specifically just for an actual making your own game. I just wanted to know, what is on your current to-do list when it comes to this realm of the RPG world? Because you said you made a jest of of finishing those miniatures. What is something that you want to complete? What is your pet project of completing something for this aspect, this area?
I have two. One is to actually learn how to run a good Fate game, which is starting, even though I don't have the rules down completely or the terminology, because our first actual game in the Dresden world we used some terminology that's just plain wrong. And I didn't realize it until I was trying to read up on some pertinent rules the next day. So that's going to be fun. The other thing is, what's the other thing? Oh, the other thing is trying to get some role playing out of another group that I run for. And we play primarily Pathfinder in that group. Trying to get some of those guys to role play. If I could get that done, I would consider myself done for the year.
What's your current tactic? What are you trying to pull in order to get them to role play?
I'm trying to work on the story elements. I don't know if it's going to work or not. I'm trying to understand their characters better, to understand what they want out of their characters and start pulling those strings better. It's something I've been picking up on in the Fate system, where you use you have aspects in Fate, and the aspects can be good and bad. So if they're good, your character can do things and gets a bonus. If they're bad for you, it's called a compel, and that's the DM trying to compel you to do something, which is bad for your character, sort of, but it makes for a more interesting story. So what I'm trying to do is learn what these guys want from their character and twist them to try and do something with that. It might be a lot of herding cats, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, what I've tried to do in order to encourage more role playing of some sort is I throw them into doing stuff that they're not used to doing. One of my favorite things that I've done is I went and got these, because every now and then I randomly look for little knickknacks and items and such in order to throw into my games. And one of these things that I got, and you're going to love this, guys, it's tech deck dice. And basically it's skateboard dice.
Oh, my God.
You know tech decks, little skateboards?
Two-finger skateboard things?
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Basically what it was, it was a dice system. It was interlocking dice, kind of those customizable ones that you take the face of little guys, and they have paintings, little images of the little tech deck dudes of different little character outfits. And what I did is I made two sets of dice and I kind of themed them. And what it was is it was for D&D. And what I did is I did a gauntlet style combat where each round I rolled the dice, and whatever image landed up, they had to fight those two guys, and they were two strong heroes that they had to fight, and it was called the Dice of Destiny.
That actually sounds pretty cool.
That does, actually.
Yeah.
And so each image I used, I gave him a quick personality, and I said, I told him flat out, whatever you think you can do, you can just try and pull it, and I will let you do it. And just by just letting them know ahead of time that the reins are yours to command, they did a lot of interesting things. The most interesting thing that they did with the Dice of Destiny was that one of the images that popped up was a police officer. It was Barney. That was the name of his character for the dice thing. And so I had him, pop out for them to fight. And the wizard, what he did was his character was a smooth talker. He basically bluffed his way into having a police officer think that he was undercover and that his buddies were with him. And he walked away.
Wow.
That's how you defeated him, by saying, oh, you're out of jurisdiction. Don't worry about this. I got this under control.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you might want to consider doing some of that, where you just turn it on its head of whatever they're doing, just bring something in there that's just completely going to, you know, make them go, what the fuck? And then they're going to do something. They're probably going to do something interesting. Or they're going to sit there and twiddle their thumbs. They're going to do something at least. All right, Rudy, what are you trying to pull off here? And after that, we're going to call it good.
Righto. Me and Will have this website going on, miserytourism.com.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, might as well promote that shamelessly for a bit.
Please
do.
No,
it's basically just our some of our games that we put up, and we're finally trying to get them out there, get them put up on the internet. And we've got, I think, 4 or 5 games up now, and you can go and see them. But other than that, as far as projects, I am trying to get more people to play D&D in real life with us. We need players very badly. Because we're from a small area, so we don't really... There's not really a whole lot of players here anyway. But a lot of our players also quit on us, so... So, yeah, we're having some problems keeping people, but...
Yeah, it happens.
We need to get that sorted out so we can... Yeah.
All right, then. Well,
yep.
Is everyone final thoughts? Everyone good?
Yeah. Final thoughts. Anybody got a good final thought?
Well, I already blew my...
yeah, you did. Thought. That was a pretty good one.
So, yeah. At the end of every Mom's Basement RPG, there comes a time and a place where the ultimate sacrifice must be made, where you, the listener... are no longer able to hear us. Microphone dun, dun, dun. Coming out.
So very sad.
Yeah.
Eject.